Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and this week we present an interview with Scott Butera, the president of Tropicana Entertainment, the successor to Columbia Sussex, which owns the Tropicana in Las Vegas and lost the license to a property with the same name in Atlantic City. Butera is recognized as a turnaround artist from the time that Donald Trump plucked him off of Wall Street to lead the effort to help the Trump Organization emerge from bankruptcy. As the president of Tropicana, Butera has an equal, if not greater, challenge to turn around the fortunes and reputation of one of gaming's most important mid-level companies. He explains how he moved Bill Young out of the picture and why he hopes to regain ownership of the Tropicana in Atlantic City. He spoke with me in September at his offices in Las Vegas at the Tropicana. Scott Butera, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's very good to see you again after all the years you work with the Trump Organization and other companies on Wall Street. You've got a real challenge here. When you first came aboard, things were kind of disorganized and chaotic in the company. Tropicana had lost its New Jersey license, and other jurisdictions were looking into that situation. What was your first priority when you came on board?
Sure. And Roger, before I start, thank you very much for having me on board. I really enjoy Global Gaming Business and appreciate being a part of this. The biggest challenge, and you're right, this was a very much a troubled company when I got here, both operationally and financially. And the biggest challenge we had was just, you know, what's the right step in turning this around? How do we sort of break ourselves free from some of the things that have gotten ourselves into trouble so that we can start improving the operations? And for us, that was establishing ourselves in good standing primarily with the regulatory authorities that we work with. I mean, clearly being in the gaming business and being a gaming operator is a privilege, not a right. And it's okay to have the buildings, but if you don't have the license that comes with them, things don't work so well. So really, you know, just establishing that we were a company that could operate in good standing, that we could operate in compliance with regulators, with regulatory authorities and with laws. We could produce, you know, accurate financial statements on a timely basis, and we could get our constituents comfortable so that they'd be a little bit patient so that we could improve the company, so that we could finally start improving the operations was our biggest challenge. And you know, basically that's what we've been doing over the last 3 to 4 months is doing just that, and I think we've been fairly successful.
We covered the New Jersey hearings pretty extensively, and it was clear that the biggest objection in New Jersey was the chairman, Bill Young, and how he ran the company, and his perceived arrogance. Did you realize right away that he had to be removed from the company, and how did you accomplish that?
Well, I think Bill Young got in a situation because he obviously bought an asset at the height of the market. Paid a big price for Aztar, and with that came the land in Las Vegas and the asset in Atlantic City and Indiana. And he affect that transaction, he levered the company significantly, and shortly thereafter, there was a fair amount of downturn in the operations, and in order to basically save cash to be able to make debt service on the high leverage, he had to do a fair amount of cutting, and a lot of that came through labor, and that created quite a bit of issues with the unions in New Jersey, and I don't think that the communication of why the company was doing what it was doing was as effective as it could have been, so clearly that resulted in a problem. I think that there were a lot of things, both operationally and with regulators and also financially, that Columbia Sussex had been doing that we think, maybe weren't the best way about going about your business. I'd say the approach for the new Tropicana is materially different on all of those fronts. You know, this is a business where it's very hard to save your way to success. You really need to be investing in your product and your people and your marketing and things like that, even during the downturn, so that you can be successful when the markets recover and even when the markets aren't recovering. So, I do think that having a different business philosophy and having the authority to have a different business philosophy was important to turning these operations around.
Did you realize right away that he had to go, though, that this was going to be a problem for the long-term survival?
We realized that we needed new oversight, because in order to be in good standing, our regulators and our investors wanted to know that there was new people at the helm. So, putting in a new board with the three individuals and myself that we've gotten, all highly experienced, credible incredible people that have a much different perspective on the business, and having completely new management team are all things that, you know, everybody wanted to see in order to give us the opportunity to be successful. So, you know, do I necessarily, you know, think that, that from an operational financial standpoint, you know, Mr. Young leaving was critical, only in the sense that we wouldn't have the opportunity to be here unless that was the case.
Okay. And does Bill Young or his son Joe, who also played a role in the company, have any role at this point?
No, they do not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they just own some equity right now.
They own equity in the company, mm-hmm. technically. Like I say, we have a new board that governs the company. Mr. Young actually signed an irrevocable proxy, giving up most of his rights as an equity holder to either replace or add or affect that board. So the board is essentially, you know, governing the company right now, and Mr. Young does have an equity interest that will be resolved when we resolve the bankruptcy process.
Okay. Let's explain who the board is. I know, you know, obviously you're on the board. Mm-hmm. I know one of the members, Brad Smith, a former commissioner, chairman of the Casino Control Commission in New Jersey, very reputable individual. And explain why you picked him and the other person.
Sure. Well, we have three, I think, outstanding independent board members. Actually, we're a board of managers because we're an LLC instead of a C-Corp. But Brad Smith comes to us from being head of the Casino Control Commission in New Jersey. He's got great experience in dealing with regulators. He's got great experience on the accounting side. He understands operations, so and he's been very instrumental in helping us put in systems and policies and procedures so that the regulators know that we're operating in compliance and we're in good standing. When things pop up, we're very proactive in dealing with regulators. We actually have a compliance committee that he chairs, that I'm on, and we spend a great deal of time dealing with all of our properties on those issues. So in terms of establishing credibility, not only in the jurisdictions where we have good standing, but in New Jersey and Indiana, I think having Brad was a strong plus. We also have two other outstanding members. Tom Benninger, who's our chairman, is a longtime restructuring banker, spent most of his career at DLJ and ultimately UBS in running their restructuring practice. He's actually the son of Fred Benninger, who for many years was Mr. Kerkorian's right-hand man at MGM. And Tom and Fred are obviously well known here in Nevada, which has helped us. And our final member is a gentleman named Mike Corrigan, who is a longtime PricewaterhouseCoopers accountant. He actually ran their entertainment practice, was the CFO of MGM Studios, and was instrumental in taking MGM Studios public, and he's somebody that comes to us with a wealth of accounting knowledge, which again, you know, for a company that was having difficulty with financial reporting was important, but also a good deal of entertainment knowledge.
Sure.
So as we look to grow and expand our operations, he's been very instrumental. Okay. So we have people that are not only credible with regulators and with financiers, but also bring a lot to the operations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What did your experience with the Trump Organization, where you really helped them emerge from a bankruptcy situation, did that translate to what you're doing here at the Tropicana?
You know, there's many similarities and differences. Mm-hmm. All of these restructurings are very different.
Right.
But yes, I think obviously knowledge of how to turn a gaming company around, knowledge of how to work with a brand. You know, we think the Tropicana brand is something that is very relevant, mm-hmm. and we can restore. And, you know, I think the good news for us is, as I look at the gaming universe and where people have gone with their business models, there's been a little bit of a hole in that sort of traditional value-oriented gaming experience, and I think the Tropicana represents that, mm-hmm. something that's a little bit retro,
sure.
a little bit more gaming-centric.
Right.
So I think that being able to revitalize a brand, you know, is something that I obviously learned. Obviously, you know, great knowledge of the Atlantic City market, and interestingly enough, many of the players on the investor side that are involved in this situation were also involved in Trump, and that was actually one of the reasons why I came here, is I looked at who the ultimate, you know, owners would be, and they were people that I was used to working with. So I do think there are similarities. Obviously, with Trump, you know, it was different in the sense he had a very strong individual, and obviously Donald was extremely successful with his brand at that
right.
time, with The Apprentice and everything else. So, you know, that created a euphoria, and the markets were much better,
sure.
you know, than they are now. So obviously layered into what everything we're doing operationally is the challenge of dealing with a very difficult financial market. But yeah, I did learn a lot through the Trump situation that's translated into my abilities here.
Looking for the most informative weekly publication in the gaming industry? Subscribe to Global Gaming Business Weekly, the only electronic news magazine that brings the news of the gaming industry to your desktop every Monday morning. Global Gaming Business Weekly is a complete publication with information on the gaming industry in the U.S., Europe, Asia, and beyond. Read about the latest moves in Indian gaming, the updated research about problem gaming, the breaking news that will impact everyone in the gaming industry, all in one publication. Global Gaming Business Weekly is read by all the top executives in the gaming industry before they start their work week. Shouldn't you? To subscribe, go to the Global Gaming Business website, www.ggbmagazine.com. Click on the Global Gaming Business Weekly icon. Don't be the last to know. Read Global Gaming Business Weekly every Monday morning.
Well, let's talk about the Las Vegas property. One of the first things you did here in Las Vegas was to reach an agreement with the Culinary Union. There had been an ongoing negotiation back and forth for during the time that from when Columbia Sussex took over. Why do you think that was so important to accomplish very, very quickly?
Well, our employees are our greatest asset. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're the front line with our customers, and I really view employees and customers as almost one and the same. Mm-hmm. So clearly your employees need to be energized and enthusiastic and respected in order for your operations to work correctly. And our employees here, our culinary employees, had been operating without a collective bargaining agreement for almost over a year. It represents half our labor force, and you know, it was just something that we needed to get corrected right away. I've had a good experience with the Culinary Union Unite here. When I was in Atlantic City with Trump, we actually settled with the Culinary Union when everybody else had a strike, and that worked out very successfully for us. So early on, you know, we started meeting and we said, look, we want to rectify this. I think we both came, you know, very open-minded. I think we, you know, knew what they were trying to accomplish. I think they worked with us in helping us on some things that we wanted to accomplish so we could enhance our operations. And it was a very, very productive experience. And I think because of the understanding of each side, we were able to reach agreement very quickly. And I can tell you it's been very successful. The effect on the labor force has been tremendous. You know, we've seen a force that went from being, you know, somewhat unmotivated and depressed to being incredibly enthusiastic and proactive. So we're very pleased. It's probably the thing that I'm most satisfied with in terms of accomplishments since I've come here.
Right. Now, you know, we've recently covered a couple of new properties that have opened, and we always get around to how important the employees are, but when you look at an older property like this that has, you know, some physical challenges and amenity challenges and things like that, aren't the employees that much more important?
That much more important. You know, it's never about the building. You know, think of how many, you know, hole-in-the-wall restaurants you go to because they have great food and great service, and how many, you know, $10 million restaurants with lousy food you never see again. So I really believe that, you know, and we are going to be working on improving this building. We're going to be improving the public areas. We've started running a program called Mint Mondays, which is a pool party, and we're going to be enhancing our pool. We're going to be enhancing our rooms. So we are going to be making significant changes to the physical plant. But despite that, it's always about the employees and their ability to cultivate customers and take care of them.
One of the attractions of this property was, of course, the location. I mean, location, location, location. You can't get better in Las Vegas. The plans they had were pretty grandiose, but obviously with the economy and the shape it's in and the investment bankers not really willing to come forward these days, what are your short-term goals for this property?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think we have an outstanding location. We have 34 acres. We're 2 miles away from McCarran Airport, and as Las Vegas Boulevard continues to get more crowded, we think that's going to be important. We obviously have a lot of development that's going on just south of us as you get past Russell Road and south of that. So we're very excited about the location. What we're going to be doing is making investments in this property with sort of a 5 to 7 year horizon. You know, we're going to take a look at what happens in Las Vegas. Obviously, there's a lot of new product that's coming online. I think much of what's being developed is going to be spectacular, but it's very much at the luxury, you know, segment. And I think as I said, there's an opportunity at the value segment. So we're going to be investing to create a great value-oriented experience on the Strip for people who want something that's affordable, that reminds them a little bit of what, you know, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you know, used to look like. As I said, that caters a little bit more to gaming, but still has great food and beverage. And we're really excited about it. You know, we think the Tropicana has a great home over the next 4 to 5 years because we can go out and get a customer that really has been displaced by this market.
I mean, when you're talking about $200 or $300 a night rooms on the Las Vegas Strip, when people were used to paying $59, I mean, I don't even know if they'll get that at this place anymore. But it is going to be value oriented, aiming for that kind of middle market customer.
That's exactly right. And the folks that are building the new bigger and better properties can't get that customer because that doesn't make their business model work.
Right.
Whereas that customer works just great for us, and we're going to give them an experience that, you know, they may or may not be willing to pay for, or may not be willing to afford at one of those higher priced properties.
Sure, sure. Well, in many ways, the Tropicana is kind of a Las Vegas icon. I mean, it's been around for so many years. Do you plan to take advantage of that reputation, that kind of retro type of thing?
No question. No question. Mm-hmm. We love the image. We love the brand. You know, we've added significantly to our team. We have a new chief operating officer, Bobby Yee, who worked for many years at Bally's
friend,
in Paris. Mm-hmm. We're in the process of hiring a new chief marketing officer. And we have just, you know, a whole new corporate team. And everybody's come here with that same view, mm-hmm. that Tropicana is this grand dame, the Tiffany of, you know, the Las Vegas Boulevard, and restoring that image is something that we're all very focused on. At our other properties as well. We think we can lever off of that image into our other markets and take advantage of that and create something that is a system of Tropicanas or Trops, and we think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay. How is the Tropicana here in Las Vegas faring right now during this downturn in the market?
You know, we have our challenges. We're obviously suffering the effects of what Columbia Sussex had done to the property. You know, a lot of the advertising, promotion, and marketing and casino hosts and things of that had been cut out of the property.
Right.
So we're in the process of bringing all of those people back and restarting. So we had our challenges, as did everybody else, through the first half of the year. I think the second half of the year, we see things starting to look up. And I think as we get into 2009, after we start to make some of these capital investments, I think we have a real opportunity to do well. So it's been challenging through the first half of the year, but the second half of the year is starting to show some positive signs, and I think 2009 will be pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about some of the other properties. The Evansville property in Indiana, under the previous management, there was an agreement to sell it to Eldorado Resorts. You're now trying to do a rebid process. Explain how that's going right now.
Yeah, and in Indiana, you know, there's a situation where if you lose a license in a jurisdiction, you really can't maintain your license in Indiana. So when we were not able to obtain, or when Columbia Sussex wasn't able to obtain a license in New Jersey, Indiana came to them and said, you know, your license is at risk. You really need to consider selling the property. And they really entered into a sale of that property in somewhat of a fire sale mode. You know, and it was something that happened when I had just joined the company. And I think in retrospect, the value that was achieved in that sale really doesn't represent the value of that property.
Sure.
We think it's an outstanding property. It's in a great market. There's a lot of growth going on in Evansville. I think the mayor and his team have done a great job of generating, you know, a lot of excitement with regard to Evansville and bringing in new business. So I look at that property and I say there's one that with a little bit of investment can create a lot of growth. So certainly we didn't feel like the value of that had been maximized. That having been said, you know, we want to work with our regulatory authorities. They had, you know, very much anticipated a sale. When you enter into Chapter 11, there are procedures by which you affect the sale, and what we've done is we've agreed to basically remarket that property through the bankruptcy process. It's called a 363 sale. You know, if we get a fair price for the property, you know, we're committed to selling it and moving on. If we can't get a fair price for that property, we would hope we'd have the ability to, you know, now that we are a new company with new management,
right,
new oversight, operate that property. But if we end up operating that property, you know we have responsibilities in terms of investing in the property, bringing back people, investing in the community of Evansville, and those are all things that we'll do and we're committed to doing now. So it's interesting because we know we have those responsibilities, but we don't mind doing them because, again, if you're investing in your community and you're bringing in jobs, you're bringing in new customers, that's good for the property as well. So that's really where we are. We're going to see how we go with this procedure, and again, if it bears fruit and we get a fair price, that's one alternative, but in the meantime, we think we've done the types of things to put ourselves in good standing to run that if we have to.
Right. Well, they had done a very nice job at that property. They was kind of reflected the Atlantic City Tropicana to a certain extent. They had like a little quarter area,
yes,
correct? And
yeah.
So they were actually moving toward branding that as a Tropicana, correct?
Yeah, yeah. It was actually called the District, and they did have a new hotel product and new restaurants, and actually a couple of the products were similar products that you saw in Atlantic City. So, yes, they were moving in that direction, kind of got stalled halfway through.
Right.
So I think there's a little bit more work to complete that out and finish it off and get it to integrate better with the gaming facility.
Right.
But yes, I think it's a great facility. You know, if we were there, we'd probably do some room renovations and renovate the boat a little bit.
Right.
And add some new slot product. But, yeah, I think it can be a fantastic addition. I think we'll probably end up rebranding, you know, whatever properties we end up holding, Tropicana,
sure,
to get the value of that,
yes,
brand. So Tropicana Evansville is something, if it came that way, we'd be very happy to do and be proud of.
Okay. How about the Laughlin properties? You do have a Tropicana down there.
Yes.
And are they feeling the same effect that Las Vegas is feeling?
Yeah, I mean, Tropicana's Express and River Palms, two of our assets in Laughlin, have been feeling the effects of the downturn. You know, the Laughlin market is, you have a little bit older clientele,
sure.
People on fixed incomes, so obviously consumer price increases and gas price increases have hurt that market a little bit. But that having been said, we like both of those assets a lot. We're going to be investing in both those assets. I think the Tropicana Express is one of our nicest assets. We have a great casino floor there. We're going to be adding carpeting in the near term and doing some room renovations there and upgrading our suites. And I think the Laughlin market actually is fairly steady. It's been pretty resilient. I don't think it's had the dramatic downturn that the Vegas Strip market has had. So that's clearly an asset we feel good about. And River Palms, unbelievable views of the river,
yes.
By the way, if you're at River Palms.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
You can almost see it, you know, shore to shore and all the bottom in between. But we just did some pretty exciting room renovations at River Palms. We're going to be changing our casino floor. We're going to be integrating the properties a little bit more. One of the things, Columbia Sussex had a philosophy that all properties should be independent and compete against one another. I don't think that's necessarily right. So if we have customers...
Especially in
that market. So if we have customers from Las Vegas that want to go to Tahoe or Baton Rouge that want to go to Laughlin or Tahoe or Vegas, you know, we want to start doing that and moving our customers around all of our properties. So I think they'll get the benefit of that. So we feel very good about the Laughlin market.
Mm-hmm. And Tahoe, you have two properties up there as well?
Yeah, I think we have one of the nicest properties in Lake Tahoe and Mount Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Columbia Sussex had done a $20 million renovation of that property. I think it's got amazing rooms. I think it's got a very good casino floor. I think we might position it a little bit differently so we could take advantage of some of the local clientele. So I think there might be some tweaks, but we have a great product up there, great food product, great entertainment product. We've been running some fabulous bands and comedy shows up there this year. So clearly Mount Blue is a winner for us. I think we want to take advantage of Mount Blue as a little bit more of a reward destination for some of our other properties. You know, Harris does a good job at doing that, and I think we want to do that as well. And then the Horizon property is an old historic property. It's got a lot of charm to it. It does have a home. It caters well to the local markets. It's a little bit calmer than the Mount Blue property. It's got unbelievable views of Lake Tahoe. If you go up there and you're in some of our suites, you have some of the most breathtaking views of the lake. We just put in an Elvis Presley suite. It was the only asset in Tahoe where Elvis Presley actually performed. So we created an Elvis Presley suite where you could go in there and almost feel like you're in Graceland. And it's had a real neat reaction to that. So both of those properties are very much in our plans. We'll be investing in them. We're working well now with the Park Cattle folks who own the land under those properties, and I think we have a good partnership with Park Cattle, and some of the things Park Cattle is looking to do on their land, which butts up against our land, is very exciting. So we feel good about those assets.
Okay. And then your final assets are some riverboat casinos down south, a couple in Mississippi and Louisiana, correct?
Yes, we have three assets in Mississippi, two in Greenville and one in Vicksburg, and we have an asset in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The Greenville assets have been strong performers. They've literally weathered the storm. You know, we've had bad rains down there during the year, but they clearly have a following, as does our Vicksburg asset. You know, our Vicksburg asset's in a historic site. I think that's an asset we'll probably invest some money in. So we feel, you know, those are strong, steady performers for us. I feel really strong about the Baton Rouge asset. I think our location is outstanding. I think some of the things that are going on in Baton Rouge are going to be great for that asset. There's a lot of investment that's going on near the convention center, which is adjacent to our asset. So I think we'll look to invest in that asset over time and take advantage of the growth that's going on in Baton Rouge. We had a little bit of a setback with Hurricane Gustav, but the team did a good job of making sure that there wasn't too much damage, and we're up and running, you know, already. So, all of those assets are going to, you know, round out our portfolio well, and I think there could be some real growth in that Baton Rouge market.
Are you concerned about the entry of Pinnacle into that market?
I think Pinnacle is a great operator. They build great product, and I think, you know, more the merrier. You know, clearly it's going to be a challenge to, you know, compete against them, but, you know, I think they're going to generate growth for that market, and hopefully that'll help us.
Right. Well, that market has been so strong since Katrina. It's just been amazing.
It has been, and I think it's going to continue. You know, I think that there's a lot of good things going on. The mayor's done a good job of generating, you know, growth in that market from outside companies. LSU is there, and LSU has run tremendous athletic programs and academic programs, so that's going to continue to grow. Obviously, the state capital. So we think that the Baton Rouge market has a lot going for it.
Okay, great. Well, let's talk about Atlantic City. You've recently indicated that you'd like to be reconsidered to get back into the bidding process there. What's your impression of how the process has been run up until this point?
Well, I think the prospect of trying to sell, you know, a large asset in Atlantic City right now in this market is very difficult. I mean, the capital markets are probably the worst I've ever seen, having spent, you know, 16 years on Wall Street and been an operator thereafter. I've never seen credit markets this difficult. So the ability for a potential buyer to come in and obtain financing to present a fair price, I think, is extremely challenging. And that having been said, you also layer on all of the challenges that are going on in Atlantic City right now.
Right.
Although I'm a very strong believer in Atlantic City and would love to be an operator there and have worked there, and I think it'll dig its way out. You know, now's really not the time. You know, for a lot of reasons to be selling. So what we've tried to do is we've had, you know, preliminary discussions with the Casino Control Commission and said, look, we're a new company. We're not Columbia Sussex. We've tried to address all of the things that you've highlighted when we weren't able to get a license. And, you know, of all the people that are out there that can come in right away and help that asset, both with managerial skills and with financial resources, we're the ones that could do it the most quickly. So, again, if your sale process doesn't bear fruit, and we're supportive of the sale process, but if that process doesn't bear fruit, and I guess they have a deadline of October 16th where they'll know whether or not they have any bids, we'd like to be considered, you know, a potential alternative to selling the asset. Because it really, you know, it was the question, do they really want to sell the asset, or do they really want, you know, all of the negative elements of Columbia Sussex removed? And basically, we've removed those negative elements, so we feel like we would be as good as any other bidder, particularly a bidder who might have to, you know, scratch to put together a deal. So, you know, the concern for me would be if somebody, you know, can't get favorable financing because of the market and really does have to, you know, dig hard into their pockets to come up with something, you know, do they have the money thereafter to invest in that asset and make the kind of changes that we think need to be made.
Right. And the people who are in place there right now, which are former Tropicana, even predated Columbia Sussex, seem to be running it, you know, as well as they can under the circumstances.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're not involved in those operations. Right. It's run by the conservator. You know, I do think they could benefit from some additional help. You know, I think adding some managerial skills there would be important. I do think they're doing a great job under the circumstances, the best they can. They got a lot to deal with. But I, you know, for us, I really think we'd like to send in a SWAT team and help them, you know, get some better results going forward.
Well, the company got a ton of negative press, and I agree with you. I don't think the company was proactive enough in explaining what they were doing. But nonetheless, the negative press was overwhelming.
Sure.
Do you think if you tried to come back in there, you'd be able to overcome that? Because obviously it would start up again.
Yeah, well, yes, we do. I mean, because the message is, you know, we are an entirely different company. You know, we have entirely different people. We have an entirely different approach. We've demonstrated that not only with settling with the Culinary Union, but in how we manage our operations. We've consolidated a lot of the operations that were deconsolidated. We've started investing in assets in ways that the other prior company would not have. Other than the name Tropicana, and if we didn't feel so strongly about the name Tropicana, we would consider changing that as well. We're a completely different, you know, team. So we do believe we'd be able to overcome that, and we would obviously, you know, demonstrate that not only in the things we said, but in the things that we do, and we would start making investments right away.
Have you been in contact with the regulators to express this kind of interest?
Yes, we've been, you know, as thorough as we can be with the regulators. We actually filed a position statement earlier in the week with the bankruptcy court so that the regulators could see exactly all of the changes that we've talked about today and the effects of them. So, yes, we've been trying to be as proactive as humanly possible. We had a great experience in Nevada, both in front of the Nevada Gaming Control Board and in front of the Nevada Gaming Control Commission, where they approved our new board and our new management team in a way that hadn't been done before. It was somewhat unprecedented. A lot of very nice things were said about the new company at that time. So, yeah, we think we could be successful in the other jurisdictions as we have been in Nevada and get that message across.
I just have one more question. Now, where do you see the company going in the long term? And this is assuming the economy rebounds in a reasonable amount of time.
I think the Tropicana can become a great gaming company. I think we have a very good portfolio. It's diverse. We're in markets that we like. I think we can do a lot to grow what we have, and then I think we can do a lot to grow externally. I think we have well-heeled potential future owners that we sort of have a short-term and a long-term growth. Short-term growth is fix what you got, manage through this economy, and then the long longer term is, you know, what other markets are out there that make sense? And, you know, when I was at Trump, I always thought you want to be big in the big markets. So Las Vegas, Atlantic City, Asia. And I think those are markets where ultimately Tropicana can exist. Clearly, you know, developing this property down the road, not in the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, but down the road is going to make a lot of sense. You have a 57-year-old building. I think we can take advantage of this great 34-acre site and do something that's spectacular. You know, there's a million iterations of what that can be, but we can do something spectacular. So I think being big in big markets is important for us. And then I think supplementing that with assets in markets, you know, like we have in Laughlin and Tahoe, but others throughout the country and throughout the world makes sense. So we want to be a fully integrated global gaming company one day down the road. So, you know, hopefully we'll get there.
Great. Well, Scott Butera, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's very, very encouraging seeing you taking such a positive attitude toward these great properties here in Las Vegas and also in Atlantic City, because they are very important to each of their jurisdictions, and to have a strong company and a strong leader in charge, I think, is very important.
I appreciate that, Roger. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn more about this or any subject, visit our websites at ggvmagazine.com or casinoconnection.com. To stay in touch with the industry, subscribe to Global Gaming Business Weekly, the industry's only comprehensive electronic news magazine delivered to your desk every Monday morning. Download subscription forms at the Global Gaming Business website. For now, thanks for listening to the Global Gaming Business Podcast.